Hello everybody, hope you enjoyed your weekend and you saw some of the great matches that we all saw, some of the great fixtures and some embarrassing things that also happened in Manchester, to be precise. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Back on Our Podcast. Josh, how you doing, man? Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm well. You're not a good person, Leonard. You know.
What did I do now?
How do you expect Manchester United fans to have enjoyed their weekend? You say hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. How is it? Will you enjoy your weekend?
There are many ways to enjoy your weekend. Now, you must not watch the Manchester derby, Manchester United fans.
Everybody's not like you. Some of us are decent people, you understand? We only watch football. We only derive our joy from football and nothing else. We don't do extracurricular activities.
See my guy disguising. No problem. I have heard you.
So how was your weekend?
My weekend was all right. It was fantastic. A lot of football matches to watch. I couldn't even keep up. So
Barcelona just edging it with a dodgy referee decision, but we'll lock up.
Yeah, well, their Barcelona are always clowning themselves. They could have buried that game easily in the first half, but they were still at it, wasting opportunities, even in the second half, wasting sitters as well. So shameful.
I think you can just say Ferran Torres clowning himself. You don't need to drag everyone else into it.
I was told this weekend that I've forgotten the word the person used that, but I criticize people too much, so I need to stop it. So
I don't know how you're going. I don't know how you're going to stop criticizing people, because now we're talking about the Manchester derby. So please, I want to know if it's possible. Okay, so this game, yeah. Okay. I was impressed with United for the first 25-30-ish minutes. I wasn't overly impressed, but like you could see there was something happening. But then from the moment City scored the second goal, it was game over, which is mind-boggling to me.
The thing is, when I was watching the game, I was more focused on Barcelona's game because Barcelona's second half coincided with the first half of the Manchester derby.
When I was looking at
the first goal, the thing reminded me a lot about Barcelona, how they switch off, no intensity, nobody picking up players. Like if you watch the first goal that De Bruyne scored, like there were three Manchester City players in the box unmarked. Like if De Bruyne had not scored, someone else would be there to finish off the chances.
How about the second goal? Maguire's defending. How about the second goal? I mean, he opened his leg like I don't know. Was he trying to dummy it for his teammate to come and clear for him?
If I go on now, people will say I'm a narcissist, call me names, different things. They big English. I don't understand. But at the end of the day, I don't know why people these days are too soft. Now, yesterday I was seeing an apology letter from Sancho again. So, like,
just on that. Roy Keane on Sunday, the match was on Sunday, yeah. Roy Keane on Sunday in the studio, he said he's expecting apology from the usual people. And Sancho just proves him right.
Exactly. Even what is his name? This guy was laughing in the studio. So,
Mika Richards was enjoying it. In the Premier League studios was having fun with Paul Scholes.
Yeah. See, like, the Sky Sports studios, like, those are the things that they like. They like all those clicks, things that will get clicks and go viral. But going back to the match, it's like, I'm just looking at Sancho apologizing. I was like, thinking to myself, if only you guys, the way you guys write these apologies, if it's as good as
you train And actually, okay, now, okay, speaking of effort, yeah. Okay, so speaking of effort, some people are saying that United gave up. What do you think? Was it a case of United giving up, or were they just outclassed by the better team? Like, there was nothing they could do about it, especially because the second half, there was a start that actually blew me away. City had 92.8% possession of the ball, percent possession in the last 15 minutes of the game. 92.8%.
Like, I feel like I would say, like, maybe there was a bit of a drop off, but for me, I would say maybe they were just trying to damage limitations, because it could have easily been more than four goals. Let's be real. But at the end of the day, one thing I question is, so the United players, some of them don't understand their roles, their positions, and their job on the field. That's why you can clearly see in phases of the game they are disjointed. Players not picking up your position. Players that are supposed to pick. Players not tracking the people they are supposed to track. So at the end of the day, there's so much that Manchester United have to do. And I've said this thing. It's not like I'm hating. Whoever Manchester United brings in the summer, Pochettino, Ten Hag, I think they will fail. And the reason for it is simple.
Let's say they will feel short term, but long term they can succeed. Before my fans that, they come if, that
if, the only way those managers succeed is if the, for example, maybe Ten Hag says, "I want Donny van de Beek," and you go out and get a completely different profile from what the manager wants. Because when you look at Manchester United's recruitment, they're not going by a kind of plan. Like, for example, other clubs have a plan where you say, okay, we're going for, like, Liverpool, their recruitment strategy. You can clearly see the way Luis...
If I'm being honest, yeah, I think only City, Liverpool and Bayern have a plan. I think the remaining big clubs just buy any good player they see on the market. I think Chelsea don't have a plan. They just buy good players and try to fit them in. I think Real Madrid do the same. But obviously you're comparing them to Liverpool, so it's a massive, massive failure in comparison to just Liverpool.
Yeah, I get it, but at the end of the day, man, some of all these players, I don't think they will fit into most of the kind of philosophy Pochettino or Ten Hag might bring to Manchester United. So it's a long day. Like, I think the rebuild that Ole did in the past 2 years, all of it have gone down the drain. So I think they need to start afresh. Yeah,
there was actually no rebuild. It was results masking poor performances, penalties from Bruno masking poor performances by even the same Bruno in the match, and everybody would just be shouting, "Oh, he scored the winning goal," forgetting how bad he actually played in that match. But you mentioned something, philosophy. So now I want to understand. Okay, so now I think United fans are sick of Mark Fred. Even the name alone makes me laugh, Mark Fred. So now my problem with both of them is they are supposed to be defensive midfielders. Correct me if I'm wrong. They don't offer any protection to the back four. So why do you keep playing both of them if they don't do anything? Why don't you go more expansive? Why don't you play a midfield three of one of them with Fernandes and Pogba, then have two wingers and Ronaldo as your focal point? So now that's the first part. Why does he keep playing McFred as a double pivot? And secondly, how on earth is Bruno a false nine? When did that start? How is that possible?
But you know what's funny? Like, I was even listening to some of the analysis from the expert on TV, but I don't know. I agree with what they said. Do you not notice that even with that weird formation in the first half, they were better than when Rashford and Lingard came on to now play traditional?
Rashford is the next Timo Werner if he's not careful. Like, I can see confidence draining out of Rashford, and it worries me a lot. I think Werner is gone. Like, in terms of, if Werner does not leave Chelsea, his career is finished. And I think if Rashford does not leave Man U, his career might head the same way. I think it's a confidence thing.
Yeah, yeah, we actually saw reports from Fabrizio saying Rashford is considering his future at United. So,
United wants future. So, like, they should be the ones telling him you need to leave, not him saying I want to leave. Now, lastly on the game, because I mean we can spend hours on this, but because of time, Ronaldo allegedly was injured. I just want a yes or no. Do you think he was actually injured, or do you think he refused to play because they told him he was not going to start?
I think, like, if I'm being honest, I feel like it can be a mixture of so many things. It can be that he's looking at the game and saying to, like the way,
you know how to tackle it from is,
if you watch Ronaldo's entire career, even when he's injured or not fully fit, he forces himself to play. So maybe he has looked at the entire controversy. He might actually be injured, but maybe he has looked at the entire controversy, the entire thing going around in the dressing room, him and Maguire.
And like, he's fed up. And like,
and he's just and he like, he's just like, why should I force myself for these guys? Let me just go to Portugal.
Okay, so, I don't think... Now, normally, I wouldn't have questioned whether I was injured or not. But, Rafani, you know when I always used to complain that Ole used to say nonsense in the media? And that was even what pissed me off more than his actual bad coaching. It was the nonsense he kept saying. Rafani has started. They asked Rafani a simple question. Like, I'm so disappointed. They asked Rafani a simple question. Why is Ronaldo not playing? Please, no, just ask me now if you're the... If you're the person interviewing me, Amanik, just ask me the question.
So, why is Cristiano Ronaldo not playing today?
He's injured. He has a hip injury. End of story. End of story. That is what he should have done. Do you know what he did? I need to follow my medical team. My medical team told me that he's injured. So if he's actually injured, I cannot force him to play. I cannot force any player to play. You understand? It's not my fault. It's the medical thing. Like, what sort of nonsense is that? This guy is injured. Just say it. And you know the reason, if he says it like that, if he says it like that, yeah, I think everything there is like that. Nobody's going to question anything.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, huh? But if you look at it, I've forgotten who said this in the studio. Was it Paul Scholes? Or I've forgotten the studio I was watching. But the reason why he's doing that thing is, he has looked at the dressing room and he has identified that some of these players have been coddled for so much and they're hiding behind people. So, like, the best way is to just give out subtle hints so that people can make what they will of it. So, you understand? Like, if you look at it, Ole protected these guys. Win or lose, Ole will come out and say, the boys did well today. The boys did well today. And they're just lacking in confidence. Like, you know, saying nonsense in the media instead of him to call out some of all the nonsense he's saying. So, like, a lot of them have been coddled a lot. And that's this guy actually even said it. I think it was Gary Neville. He said when he eventually goes up to when he goes upstairs, because we know that he's on a consultancy, he's going to take a consultancy role come summer. So he's going to be the one that will impact most of this player's future, because he can now tell the new manager, yo, this guy is a bad egg. Know what you will do with him or will sell him. You understand? Because he has that power now and he has been in the dressing room to see what is going on. So I think most of these players, they need to be on their toes, because at the end of the day, Rangnick is seeing everything that is going on, and Rangnick will be here longer than most of these players. So, you know, if they feel like they want to play for Manchester United, they need to start pulling their weight, because what we are seeing on the pitch is actually
a... But do you think Rangnick will have that amount of power to say, oh, I don't like this player, so we have to sell him? Because at the end of the day, he's not the sporting director, as much as we want to say, oh, he's going to be upstairs. But I think the word is consultancy role. That's, he's going to be a consultant. So I don't think he has that much power. But then again, he still has some amount of power.
Okay, just quickly say this before I move on. I'm not saying he will have the power to, but what I'm saying is his opinion will have weight. Like, for example, once he says one or two things, either they take it or leave it.
Like this, end, okay, like this player doesn't train with intensity.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. So either they take it or they leave it. But he has given his own two cents on the issue.
I mean, United is a long running super at this point, and we'll just wait for the next episode next weekend against Tottenham. Speaking of Tottenham, my goodness, if only they could play like this every week. 5-0 against Everton, going on 7 or 8. I mean, Everton were dreadful. I think for me, I even want to focus on Everton because yes, Spurs played well, but I mean, come on. That back four, you see that back four of Everton? If they play that back four from that in the end of the season, they will get relegated. Like, let's just even start from there. Mike Keane has been rubbish for more than 6 months and nobody has said a word. Coleman, I used to love Seamus Coleman, one of my favorite right backs in the Premier League, but his legs are gone. He can't really do much these days. I don't know, that back four, let's just say, okay, let's start. Do you think Everton can stay up with that back four? Or is it a case of some people are injured and they can do better than that?
I think the question you should be asking is, do you think Everton can stay up with Frank Lampard being in charge? Because
I'm coming to Lampard. No, trust me, I'm coming to Lampard. Lampard is not getting away with anything on this episode. Let's just start the back four.
The back four is like, I don't think there's so much they can do about the back four, if I'm being honest with you. I think it comprises of Kuma, like you said, Mike Keane. Then you have Holgate and I think Kenny.
Holgate should be a model. He should not be a footballer.
So looking at their bench, like I'm not seeing anybody that can really spark. Like Yeremina was the one that was starting ahead of Holgate, but he's injured. He has a muscular problem. Everton's problem, yeah, I think it's midfield. Like that, there's no balance in the midfield. That's why you can bypass their midfield so easily. And yes,
you think there's no balance or there's no discipline? Because if you look at it, you say Alan should be disciplined, Doucouré should be disciplined, Van der Beek should be disciplined, but because Doucouré and Van der Beek are similar, so is it a case of you shouldn't have two box-to-box midfielders, you should have a box-to-box, a playmaker, and then your DM? Is that the balance you're talking about?
Like to me, having these similar things in midfield is not bad, but there should be a defined role for each of them, whereby they know what they are doing. For example, if Doucouré is going into the box, Van der Beek should know that he should be covering for Doucouré. But we've not seen that. Like, there's no cohesion in what they're like. If Doucouré is attacking, Van der Beek is attacking, then Alan too is now giving support as well. And all of a sudden, there is now a transition. And when the transition comes, there is nobody in the midfield. Everywhere there's gaps and spaces, and all of a sudden they are exploited from it. So I feel like they've not been properly drilled in terms of people knowing what to do at particular moments. So everyone, they are just going by inshallah vibes now.
They've not been drilled, and obviously that comes back to the coach. I want to say something. Chelsea fans, pay attention to me, listen very carefully. I remember when Frank Lampard was sacked. I was seeing people crying on social media. Oh no! He's a Chelsea legend. He's one of our own. He's our guy. He's our father. Oh no! Ah no! How is Mount going to cope? How are the youth players going to cope? Oh now they will throw away with James and Tamiba. Can you guys now see that your beloved club legend is a terrible coach? Can you see it? Now, Lampard as a player was one of the best midfielders of his generation, if not even of all-time Premier League. But now, coach is not doing his job properly. Now, Lampard, the coach, might become a good coach 5 years from now, 2 years from now, even a year from now. But as of today, March, what's today's date? I want to get
today's March 8th.
Today, March 8th, 2022, Lampard is not a good coach. Anybody should quote me anywhere. Lampard is not a good coach. I don't know. First of all, Leonard, do you disagree with that statement?
I don't disagree. Like, someone even made a post that when you think of it, the tactics of, like, the tactics of a manager most likely flows through the, like, the person was making, the person made the post, and I've forgotten how to phrase it, but, like, I'll try my best. It was like, the midfield, when you play as a midfielder, you have one of the best view of what is going on the pitch.
Okay, every, the tactics of a manager is the position he played will determine how good his tactics are, or something like that.
No. Just hear me out. Like, I'll land on it. Like, you're saying the midfield position, when you play the midfield position, you have the best,
the best position
in to see everything happening on the pitch. Everything flows through you. The tactics of what the manager is trying to implement is from you as a midfielder. So now he doesn't understand that's why when he looks at midfielders that score a lot of goals and people praise them, they don't understand that, like, some of what those other midfield, like him basically saying it, he's just basically saying how does a midfielder end up being a poor coach? Because when you think of it, it's actually true. Like, a midfielder should be decent at coaching. Like, at least decent at coaching. We're not saying it should be one of the best. Like, look at the best managers in the game now. Most of them are midfielders. Most of, like, Pep Guardiola was a midfielder. Johan Cruyff was an attacking player, midfielder. Like, I'm talking about the greats. Some of all the big names that we know of. But, like I don't understand why...
Antonio Conte was a midfielder.
You see? So, like, you can go on the list. The list is there. Even Xavi. Okay, let me know you, Xavi. Xavi.
Come on. Let's be serious.
Okay,
now.
Luis Enrique was a midfielder. So...
But then flip side, you still have Pelo, you still have Lampard, midfielders.
No, I think Pelo was giving... The Juventus side was too poor. I don't want to blame just Pelo. He has a shitty team and he was still learning. So that's why the team was too poor.
Look at Allegri. So now with Lampard, can they stay up? Because now I'm actually really, really fearful for Everton. Because I didn't think it was a conversation to be had whether Everton can stay up. What I saw yesterday, but can Everton stay up?
The only way I see it is I don't think they'll get relegated, simply because I'm not saying because they'll play good football or whatever. Like, there'll be three other sides that are worse than them. That's just it.
Okay. Everton, I've checked Everton's upcoming fixtures, and I want to say something now. And Lampard and Chelsea fans should listen to me. Everton have worst fixtures among all the teams. Newcastle's fixtures, Brentford, Leeds, Burnley, Watford, Norwich. Everton have the worst fixtures. Everton have to face a lot of the top sides. And if this is how they face top sides, then they are gone. Everton have not won any match away from home since August, I believe, against Brighton. And a lot of these games that they are going to play, these big sides, will be away from home. And if they don't pick up their away form, and if they don't defend like actual footballers, Everton are gone. It's sad to say, but Everton are gone.
Yeah, fair enough. I agree. They need to start picking up results.
Speaking of people picking up results, Arsenal are, banged on 4 Premier League wins in a row. Just quickly on Arsenal, Arteta, is he now finally showing that he's a good coach? Because I can see Arsenal cooking something.
Arsenal cooking up something. I'm even looking at my screen now. So they made it a Premier League table of the last 10 matches. and Arsenal and Man City are sitting together on 25 points. So they've won, like, in the last 10 matches, Arsenal and Man City have won more points than any other team. Then the other opposition is now Liverpool on 23 points. So Arsenal, they are cooking. They are cooking.
Like, you know something interesting about these form tables. I saw one today that in the last, like, just this year, 2022, only Liverpool and Man City have more points than Newcastle, I believe. But now we're stretching it to 10 matches for Arsenal to come into the conversation. So I think form guide is just how well do you want the club to look? How far back do you go for the form table?
Yeah, not like I get it, but at the end of the day, I'm just saying, like, when you look at it, like, I think Arteta has finally turned the corner. It feels like, yes, he has really learned from one of the best, which is Pep Guardiola.
Arsenal favorites for top four.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. The other two teams, Tottenham and Manchester United, they are showing a level of inconsistency. So if Arsenal are to continue this way, if all teams remain constant and they keep their form, I think, yeah, realistically, they can get to the top four.
Okay, now Chelsea won Burnley 4-0. I watched the game. Chelsea were, if you had watched the first half, you'd have thought that Chelsea were the ones in the relegation zone. That's how bad they were. Like, I'm not even joking. You'd have thought, I actually thought Chelsea were in the relegation. Like, if you just bring someone that doesn't watch football and tell him one of these people is third, the other one is 18th, he will tell you Chelsea were the ones that were 18th. But then in the second half, Chelsea scored 4 goals. I still can't wrap my head around how that happened. But then there's an answer, and the answer is with James. Thomas Tuchel, after the match, he indirectly said, he didn't say it directly, but he hinted that Chelsea would still be in the title race if Reece James didn't get injured. Are we buying that? Or is that a fair comment? Because Reece James is so good, but, like, is it that good to make such a difference? Would they have been in the title race?
Let me even add to that. If Ben Chilwell and Reece James were fit for majority of the games, just need to be in the title race.
Do both of them make Lukaku a good striker or an informed striker?
No. Like when you watch the way Chelsea play, they rely so much on their fullbacks. That, like, their fullbacks having goal scoring opportunity is not a fluke. It's from the tactics and the system that Tuchel implements. So that's why you see Chilwell, Reece James getting into goal scoring position. Either they score or they assist. Like, you could remember when they were in the title race, that was what was happening. It was not a fluke. It was part of the system and part of the way the formation was structured. So at the end of the day, like, I understand the point he's getting at, and there's a valid argument to be made there.
I think it's fair. I think they would have been in the title race, but they would still be below Liverpool, but they would have been closer to Liverpool. That's just the way I see it. Speaking of Liverpool, they won 1-0. Obviously, West Ham were wasteful. If you're a club, are you worried that your team defended badly and they were lucky basically to win? Or is it a show of, oh, we didn't play well, we won? Is it character? How do you look at it?
They were very lucky. Lanzini helping them. I don't know if Lanzini was a defender Fornals there with that Charles.
Fornals.
Fornals did his best, but Arnold cleared it from the line. So
his best?
Yeah. The Lanzini one to me was an open net. He, after doing the dummy to send Trent back to sleep.
I think the dummy was even a fluke from that finish. You can tell the dummy was a fluke.
Let me give him the dummy. Dummy, maybe it was intentional or no. But, like, at the end of the day, like, Liverpool look at that fixture and be like, ah, we got the way we won there. But I think Klopp won't care. At the end of the day, what they'll remember is they got the 3 points. So, and they are still sustaining the pressure on Man City.
Speaking of that, that was good. Speaking of lucky.
Okay, go.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I heard what you said. You said that they put pressure on Man City. So, speaking of lucky, I think Trent wanted to shoot, ended up crossing to Mane. If that is not luck, then I don't know what is luck. So, and that was actually the only goal of the game.
Exactly.
Now in La Liga, we saw Barcelona winning. Like I hinted at the intro, Barcelona edging. Barcelona edging Elche. First, obviously, you're the wrong person to ask. Was that a penalty for Elche? I know the answer, but let me just hear it.
No. To me, that was not a penalty. Simply because.
Of course.
No. I'll give you my reason. If you don't see it as valid reason, Alba went on the air and his hand was in his body. He didn't make any movement towards the ball. The movement he made with his arm was towards carrying his arm towards his body. So there was no move. Like for example, the Elche penalty, the one Barcelona got from Elche, you saw that the guy actually flicked his hand to stop the movement of the ball. So now this one is the ball, like there's difference between the ball. Like we cannot be giving penalties for everything that is handball.
I agree. So the way I see it, yeah, I put it as 80-20. 80-20, 80 not a penalty, 20 a penalty, because there are some refuse on earth that will still give it. We both agree.
Now, Mike Oliver, okay, those are the ones I'll give you. I know.
Okay, so some people say that Barcelona and Real Madrid especially get the rub of the green with refereeing with 50-50 calls. Do they have a point? Like people who watch, let's say Premier League fans, look at La Liga and just hiss that, I beg you, this league that the two big sides always get the calls. And looking at this now, I think there would have been more of a debate if it was Barcelona denied the penalty. Is that fair to say?
Yes, obviously, Barcelona has a bigger reach, audience and all of that. But at the end of the day, I get what people are saying. It's the same thing with the Premier League clubs. Like, the big clubs get calls that favor them. Like, it's just how it is.
Not all the big clubs. Arsenal have not been getting calls.
Chelsea
recently, we saw the League Cup final. They didn't get calls. Tottenham a big club. Tottenham are a big club. Tottenham don't really get too many calls. I think it's
City. Like I'm not even saying, like when you look at it in general, the big clubs like always get calls that
favor more often
them.
Than not,
More often than not, like when you look at it generally. So it, like there's a valid argument to be made there.
But I think all in all, Barcelona deserve to win. So I'm not even trying to say it was the penalty or whatever. Barcelona deserve to win. Ferran Torres. Still wasteful. I hope he doesn't turn to another team of Vienna. This is Rashford and Ferran Torres are edging towards Vienna Avenue.
There's cause for concern, but I think looking at it is, I think the only relief for him is he's not doing it to the point where it's costing Barcelona games. He has been getting away with it. Barcelona is still getting the result. So time will tell if there'll be, for example, maybe the Clásico. They're supposed to score a winning goal. Let's say a winning goal in the dying seconds and he ends up missing a sitter. Like, that would be something that can be detrimental to his
confidence, side. Mental health. Yeah. Okay.
So I feel like right now, the pressure is not really on because he's getting away with it. And Barcelona, they are still grinding out those results.
But then, if you're Xavi, let me speak for myself. If I'm Xavi, I'm putting that guy on the bench, like for at least 2 weeks. Let him have sense. Like I'm putting him on the bench. I'm not even bringing him on as a sub. Am I too harsh?
Yeah, that would be too harsh because I'll give you like the perfect way to even look at it is the Elche game. You could see that immediately Ferran came in, there was an impact. Like that's one of the reasons. Like even if I don't rate Sterling, I still respect him. I've used Sterling so much as an example because most of us watch Man City because of how they play good and attractive football.
When you look positioning, at Ferran, right?
His positioning is so good that, like, I don't even think there will be any game where he will not have chance to score because the way he moves, his movement, and that game movement has to come with reading your opponent and having a good game IQ. So, like, his movement is so good and intelligent that he's normally going to have it. Like, in the Elche game, I'm not even capping. If you watch it, you could have easily gotten a hat-trick in the second half but it wasn't to be. Like, he had a chance that was saved, the one that Adama crossed to him, that was saved, like, point blank. Like, if you had put a bit of an angle on that shot, that would be a goal, because it was a very, very good opportunity to score from. So, like, his movement is very, very good. Like, I don't understand where he learned it from. And I think looking at it, like, that's one of the reasons, at the end of the day, Xavi plays him, because he still offers so much, even if he doesn't score goals.
Okay, so kids, you heard it. Even if you don't have finishing, at least have movement, you'll be able to scam some clubs into buying you. I wish I had learned that when I was younger. Real Madrid won Real Sociedad 4-1 coming from behind. Obviously, we know Benzema is good. You know Vinicius is good, blah, blah, blah. But there's a new player that impressed me, and it was Camavinga. Obviously, he had the plays because Ancelotti is almost allergic to rotating his squad, but he had to this time around because Cruz was injured. But Camavinga acquitted himself very well.
Yeah, like, we have to give credit to where credit is due. We saw that at the beginning of the game, after when they conceded, yeah, so it was very difficult to break their opponents down. So they had to start taking shots from range. And Camavinga came up with a beauty. Then a couple of minutes later, Modric was like, "What the kids can."
Which goal was better?
I think it was the Modric one. I think Modric was like, "What the kids can do, the old man, the veterans can do better." So Modric did his own, and that one was beautiful. Like, the keeper stood no chance.
And then, like, Benzema was like, "Okay, when he scored the penalty, I'm sure he was looking at the ref like, oh yeah, cancel this one too now."
Exactly. After getting two, cancelled already. So it was good. Like, even the goal that I really liked. Like, I liked all the goal, but the one I really liked was, it reminded me of MSN. The way MSN used to bypass midfield. So, the long ball for Casemiro to release Carvajal, where Carvajal was now, took his precious time, they now cut it back for Asensio. That goal was very, very good. It just three passes. That goal was very good.
I mean Carvajal had the freedom of the entire pitch. It was just defending.
I'm telling you. But some players, we get into this position, some fullbacks that we know of, we get into this position and they will not still deliver a good
game.
Let's not call names.
In the Serie A, we saw Milan win the game at the top. Giroud was injured in the game in the first half, and I watched the first half. I was like, this guy needs to come off. This guy needs to, like, he was bleeding, and they just bandaged his leg and, like, told him, guy, continued playing. I was like, eh? And then to go through that pain, you could see that he was hobbling, he was limping, but then for him to actually score the winning goal, it just shows the man's character.
The thing is, I like players that are warriors, ready to fight and give their all. Like, that's the difference. Like, when you look at so many players in Europe, like, the commitment that they show towards their team, you can't say the same for some of the players in Manchester. We don't need to call names. But the truth is, like, Giroud, he has been top class, and he's still, like, obviously, he has lost some of his abilities, but still, he's still showing that he can still be a very, very good goal scorer. And credit to him, like, he's still one of the top ones in the Serie A, and he proved that in this game.
I think the game was 2 kg for my liking in the first half. I was expecting a few more chances, but it was like everybody was scared of, well, let's not even give our opponent any chance. So it was very cagey. It wasn't end to end. Everything was just in the midfield. And then a lot of fouls that the ref was not blowing. I was like, do they want them to kill each other before they actually blow for a foul? It was just interesting because, I mean, watching Premier League, someone just, Breeze will just blow so and they will give foul. Then you see, they'll actually kick your leg and then ref will say play on. I was actually shocked with the refereeing, but I guess it's what it is, the reputation of the league. But all in all, you know, I'll say Milan win. Obviously, they had less possession, but football is not about possession only. You need to actually do stuff with the possession. I don't think Napoli did enough with what they had.
Okay, let me ask you a question before we move on. What did I tell you about Napoli and Spalletti?
To be fair, they're not out of the race yet.
Oh, that's not what I'm asking. Now, what did I tell you now?
That they are bottlers.
Okay. Where do you think Juventus is on the table now?
Juventus are fourth.
How many points behind Napoli?
4 points behind Napoli.
Okay. I will leave it there. You just connect the dots. Don't worry, I'll leave it there. We'll come back to this in the future. No problem. I will leave it there.
But you're forgetting something. Okay. You can't fully trust Juventus either.
Okay, that's what makes this thing worse. That's what makes this thing worse. For Juventus to catch up to that place and can still pull ahead of these guys. That's what makes it worse. And you see in the end,
I think if Juventus win the Serie A this season, then all the players in AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Napoli should be flogged. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, they should be flogged.
Like, I don't even think Juventus can win it. But there's something I'm sure of. They will finish ahead of Napoli. That's something I'm sure of. You will see.
Oh, wow. Wow. I won't go that far, but we'll see.
No problem.
I talked some minutes ago. Tammy Abraham scored this weekend as well. Roma won 1-0. Giroud scored. Did Chelsea make a mistake selling, especially Tammy, because he's the younger person? Did Chelsea make a mistake, or am I just talking with hindsight?
Now, this is hindsight, because at the end of the day, Chelsea knows that the ability of Abraham. They just felt like there's no opportunity for his development at Chelsea, because when you look at it, Abraham needs run of games, because he needs that run of games to actually develop into that top striker. And he's never going to get that at Chelsea, for being honest. And I think the goal you're talking about, that was his 20th of the season, because I saw something like that on Twitter.
Yeah, 20th and 13th in the league alone.
No, that is crazy. And this is his first season. That is crazy. Mourinho has done a lot with him.
I think Chelsea actually still believe in him, or they are afraid of another Salah De Bruyne situation, because they have a buyback clause on Tammy Abraham, which is going to be active at the end of next season.
Chelsea, there's nothing to worry about. They are covered. They can just get their man back for maybe more for more money, but still, like. And if they don't even want him, they can still do what Real Madrid did with Morata. They can buy Abraham back, then I'll sell him to another person for a much higher price.
The guy's confidence will be on the floor if they do that. That's not fair. So for me, the way I look at it is, selling Abraham was not a bad decision. Obviously, I sound stupid saying it, because he has scored 20 goals. Lukaku has scored what, 12? But then the mistake was buying Lukaku. So I repeat, selling Abraham was not wrong, but buying Lukaku was wrong. So that's just the way it is, basically, to me.
Alright, fair enough.
We have Champions League games this week. Liverpool, Inter, I don't even want to waste my time talking about it. Liverpool are true, are they not?
Yeah, I think worst comes to worst, Inter will put up a bit of a fight, but at the end of the day, Liverpool have the firepower too, and the legs. Let's remember that. Liverpool, there's no team that can cope with them when we start talking about legs. And I don't think Inter will be able to cope with Liverpool's intensity for the full 90 minutes. We saw it at the San Siro last week. So I think this game won't be any different. So I think Liverpool will win this one and they'll be through.
And if Lautaro Martinez, because he scored the hat-trick this weekend against Salernitana. If he can actually not be afraid of Van Dijk. Because what I saw in that first leg, he was scared to run at Van Dijk. He was scared to go one-on-one.
Like, so he was if, like, there's no point. And I don't understand
exactly,
why.
Exactly. I cannot pass. Like Van Dijk's reputation is so great that he was just thinking, I cannot pass Van Dijk. Let me not bother. So if he can overcome that, then probably Inter can actually cause problems for Liverpool. But at the end of the day, Liverpool will get over the line. Now, let's talk about Bayern. Bayern, FC Hollywood, blah, 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 blah. But the way they are going recently, winning games unconvincingly and dropping points. We saw first leg, they had to score a late equalizer against Salzburg. This just concluded weekend. They drew with Leverkusen. Is it possible? I know I'm going to sound crazy, but is it even a possibility at all that Bayern will be knocked out by RB Salzburg?
I know, like, Bayern, they are facing a lot of drama off the pitch, and looking at it, it's starting to, I would say, it's starting to reflect on the pitch as well, because some of the results we've seen from them lately has been shocking. But I feel like at the Allianz Arena against Salzburg, I think it's a no-brainer. Bayern will win. I just think they have so much quality, even if they choose not to even play on their first gear, second gear, third gear, they will still win. That's how powerful and strong they are. So I feel like if it was away from home, then maybe Salzburg would have stood a chance. But against Bayern at Allianz Arena, like, trust me, as a Barcelona fan, I know what I'm saying. So I think it's a wrap.
Yeah, I think Bayern are actually going to be too much for Salzburg. Obviously, results have been shaky. Performances have not been great. But at the end of the day, this is Bayern. I think it's going to be the biggest upset of the season if they get knocked out. It's going to be unbelievable. And it's actually going to give us stuff to talk about on this podcast. So Salzburg might as well just help us, do us a favor. But I don't expect it.
Yeah. Both of us, we don't believe in miracles, but what can we say?
No. I believe in miracles, but maybe not football miracles. Believe in miracles, please.
Okay, no problem. You'll be a billionaire in 2 years. No problem.
I'll be a billionaire, but I don't know after 2 years. Because I only count billionaire in dollars, you understand?
No problem.
I've told you this before.
No problem. No problem.
PSG Real Madrid. Mbappe picked up an injury in training. He might not be fit, but some people are. We've heard reports now saying that he's not as bad as first feared. He's going to be fit enough to start. Real Madrid are going to be missing Mendy and Casemiro. Without those two guys, I struggle to see. Now, if Mbappe plays and without Madrid having those two guys, I struggle to see them winning.
But just look at what we are saying, like, even the football world. Like, we're forgetting that this team has Messi and Neymar. So, what are Messi and Neymar doing there? So,
Messi, this is not Mbappe's team. We've seen it in the last few months. We've seen it.
Man, this is getting embarrassing for Messi and Neymar because at the end of the day, like, these guys, even if they are not at the top of their abilities anymore, but still, like, against a Champions League game, Bernabeu, there shouldn't be any talk of Mbappe being missed. Like, the manager should have the confidence of saying, okay, even if Mbappe is fit, let me even bench him. We have enough fire.
Of course. They will sack him this night if he should bench Mbappe.
Man.
Like, not that he's injured, though. Not that Mbappe is injured. Like, he should just bench him. They will sack him.
And it's crazy. It's crazy. But would you go in?
I mean, I've already said PSG. PSG. Not just that PSG. Not just that they will qualify. They will win again.
Okay. I think there might be a comeback in this one. I will go with Real Madrid.
Who is the left back? If you you're going with Real Madrid. Who's their left back, please?
I think they'll move Alaba to that position, or they might play
and Nacho then bring there. Nacho.
Or they might play Nacho there instead.
So basically, of Alaba. Nacho is going to come in. It's just a matter of if he's going to be centre back or left back, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nacho against Mbappe. I don't pray for such from my enemies.
Or play three at the back or something. But they'll just make sure that Alaba is tucked in with the guys, because Alaba has that experience. Because we saw
how Alaba. Camavinga, as well as he played at the weekend, this might be a game that is too big for him. If you want to bring Fede Valverde, what is his confidence level like? Because he has been frozen out of the team for a long time. So I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just struggle to see Real Madrid winning.
Ah man, I don't think Camavinga starts like. Fede Valverde used to be so good under Zidane. Ancelotti just, man, I don't understand what Ancelotti is doing. But at the end of the day, like...
Yeah, but what do you expect him? He has picked his midfield three that he trusts, and they have not failed him so far. So, is he there to coach Real Madrid, or is he there to babysit Valverde?
Nah, he's there to... That's the thing. That's why, to me, I don't like the model of Real Madrid. Like, they just go after success, and they don't care about
Siwi is talking. Continue flops in your club.
No.
Sanchez,
no.
In fact, the list is endless. Let's not even start.
No, that what you're mentioning is failed transfer. But what I'm saying is Barcelona always, like, let me give you an example. One of the criticism of, let's say, Valverde and Setien and Koeman was because they were not reusing. I don't know if you know this guy, Ricky Puig. Do you know Ricky Puig? Like,
yeah, yeah.
So that there was heavy criticism.
Okay. Why? Sorry. Just on that. Why is nobody criticizing Xavi for not using him?
Let me land. No one can criticize Xavi for not using him because when you actually look at it, like from a standpoint of you don't want to be biased. Pedri is ahead of him. Frank is ahead of him. And Gavi, who is 17, is ahead of him. Now, when I remove those three, let's say those two, they are not those ones that are not fit. Then you now look on the bench. Nico is still ahead of him. So now Nico has to now be injured for
something. Like Nico is ahead of Ricky Puig.
Yes, that is. That's what we're seeing.
My goodness.
And the reason why all this thing happened, it goes back to what I said with Tammy Abraham. It goes back to what I said. As a young player, you need game time to develop. And when you look at Ricky Puig, when he comes on, I think he came on against Napoli. He was still decent, but now
it's not the same player. That confidence.
Yeah, it's not the same. Yes, he has his development as
he should just leave Barcelona, basically.
That's what I'm saying. So now, like me, I'm looking at it like, even if you don't want to prioritize signing, but prioritize the people that are coming from your academy. Like, it's a no-brainer. That's why I don't understand the model of Real Madrid. So, but at the end of the day, like, you can't fault it because...
Of course. They've been successful.
No, I'm not calling Ketu Black.
Thank you very much.
Because at the end of the day, they've been very, very successful with that model. It works for them. So, I can't criticize something that works.
Okay, so guys, that's the end of the episode. Like you just said, Leonard, say you should babysit players instead of looking for success because you should care about your youth academy. What a load of... And you said people are going soft. I mean, you are even... This is the most kind-hearted thing I've ever heard from your mouth.
Should 35-year-old Modric be playing 90 minutes?
If he's fit enough, yes.
Week in, week out.
If he is fit enough, yes.
Man, I disagree with that. Like, that is where... No. I'm not saying, like, Modric playing every week. I don't have any issue with it. But... Modric playing 90 minutes every week, that is what I have issue with. So that is just me.
Before this season, we saw Ronaldo play 90 minutes virtually every week, and there was no problem in Juve. Thiago Silva has been playing 90 minutes every time he's fit, no problem at Chelsea. But all of a sudden now, they should babysit Valverde and play him. Okay, I've heard you guys. What else do you want to say before we go?
I'm done. If you don't see the... we don't see what I'm trying
you've
to say.
You've gone soft, my guy. You've gone soft. No. You've gone soft.
All right, no problem. Is that me talking
about? Thanks for listening, guys.